Welcome to the M3 podcast. Your journey to movement, mindset, and medicine starts here.
Hello, M3 family. It's your host, Mermaid Bree, and I hope you all are having a great start to this week. If you're listening to this in real time, I am packing up my bags and getting ready to leave for Southeast Asia. I can't wait to spend the next 3 months exploring the world, adventuring, and just living my heart's desire to see the world. I mean, I love the saying, she believed she could, so she did. I've mentioned this before a few times in the podcast, and my version of that is, she believed she could travel the world, so she did. And for someone that I get to interview as an inspiration, ironically, Rissa is a huge world traveler. She is also the creator of Paddle for Peace, which is a nonprofit organization that helps diversify coastal spaces. She works with kids. She helps with the George Floyd that I remember was another paddle out. Any paddle out that has to do with some sort of major cause where we can create some sort of feeling and impact in our community. And my favorite was where I met her through the breast cancer awareness. Ironically, someone in her family, which she will get into the story of this with her sister, had breast cancer at the time, and she had no idea that she would compassionate at a level she did, having to go through a double vasectomy and knowing that she didn't even realize she created the Barack gene with her. And so she also has her own crazy story adventuring around the world, feeling like if this is how I'm going to live the rest of my life, I'm going to do it in the way I choose. She didn't let fear hold her back and she overcame breast cancer, now thriving better than ever. I believe right now she is traveling around the Virgin Islands, which is just, I mean, go live your world, girl. Go live it all to the biggest, fullest potential you can, because I'm so proud to watch you thrive. And, you know, just be who you are in the biggest expression you can be. So Rissa has such a beautiful story. We talk about things like maybe traditional therapy not being our best favorite or form, and how we go about healing ourselves through different formats, whether it's talking to a friend or making an impact in community and seeing the world through a different lens. So let's get into today's episode. Welcome back, everybody. This is my friend Rissa. We have we met each other a couple years ago at the Paddle for Peace. It was right when they were doing the breast cancer awareness, and it's crazy to hear about how this was all full circle too. So I didn't realize that other people in your family have experienced this already, and then seeing you run it, and you have your own story as well, which we'll fast forward into later. But Paddle for Peace is something that is local here in Pacific Beach, and I see you going all over the coast in Southern California, all the way up to Huntington Beach even, and you're all over the world too, girl. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, girl. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me. So proud of what you've built, and I'm ready to just vibe with you.
Yes. Okay.
My fellow mermaid.
Oh, girl, that's something that we do vibe on heavily, is the mermaid power that we have, and it's that love for the ocean. Environmentalism, I know, is huge. And Paddle for Peace is not just about being conscientious of the ocean or our environment, but also of each other. Mm-hmm. So where did Paddle for Peace come from? What inspired you to create this nonprofit?
So I'll tell you how it started, which is funny because it's different from where it is now. So during like the BLM protests and the George Floyd unfortunate situation, I was like, you know, just kind of watching things unfold and just feeling this deep sense of like pain for what happened, what our people continuously have to go through. And I was like, you know, I want to do something to honor and bring people together. And I know some people are, you know, a little more reserved because they're like, oh, people are burning things and it's turning violent and blah, blah, blah. I wanted to offer an alternative. So I said, let's do a paddle out at the beach. Me and my friends, we'll just kind of get together and, you know, heal.
Yes.
Me and my friends ended up being thousands of people, and I have no idea how that happened, right? So the day of, they're like, well, you have to lead it. You have to do a speech. And I'm like, I wasn't prepared for this. I was prepared to, you know, like, I'm a light worker. I want to heal my friends myself, and we'll use the ocean. Yeah. So I found myself leading thousands of people in the paddle out, having to give a speech, and all of it was just kind of from the heart, right? Mm-hmm. And from there, it kind of like sparked something in me. I'm an entrepreneur. I create things. And I was like, well, let me do something with this. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I kind of experience as a surfer and a woman of color is there's not many people in the surf that look like me. There's not many people in the mm-hmm. ocean that look like me. So I was like, I want to bridge that gap. Let me see what I can do. So then I said, let me just offer a free surf lessons to people of color. And then that turned into, well, now I want to work with kids and I want to bridge that gap and, you know, get them to the coast. So I said, let me develop programs. Wait, the volunteers that come are amazing. And wait, let me build a community. And it just kind of kept growing. So now we serve about 600 kids a year, kids from underserved communities, BIPOC kids, adults, and we bring the community together to just offer that sense, because I feel like we're very social beings and I feel like we're stronger with community and people actually benefit from community. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what Paddle for Peace is. We're a way to get to give experiences to those forgotten neighborhoods and those forgotten communities. Yeah. We bring them to the coast so that they can heal and recreate and experience the beauty of their backyard. And then we have the community that comes together to not only give them this, but to also fill ourselves with like-minded people who care about each other and the earth.
Okay, so I remember these programs now. They're all coming full circle. I'm mm-hmm. like, oh my goodness, I remember this is now fresh with, I think, the second year. Has it been 2 years?
We're 3 years in.
3 years in.
June will be our fourth year.
Even with the kids?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, the first year we were kind of doing kids, but yes. Now, like with our programs,
yes, the programs.
The programs are 3 years.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay. So, what are the age ranges for the kids and what all can they do for activities?
So, we teach anybody from 2 years old all the way up to 75.
Whoa.
And for our programs, we try to put like-minded kids, you know, together because they can be competitive.
Mm-hmm.
So, we teach 2 years old all the way to 17 years old. And we have a spring program. We have a summer program. We have year-round programs.
Wow.
We're with them for 4 weeks because we also mentor them. We give them resources and tools to deal with things that they may deal, you know, in life or at their homes. That's not necessarily ideal. We give them tools and resources and let them know that they can use the ocean as a means of healing. So we do surfing, paddleboarding. We do wakeboarding. My friend owns a boat company, and he's gracious enough to donate his, you know, resources and time, HydroMotion. We do soccer, volleyball. We do yoga, and we have academics. So we teach them how to journal because it's very important to me as a journaler. We teach them about science, ocean science. Our flagship is our surf and science program.
So here these kids are getting a full wellness wheel. They're socializing with each other. They're intellectually being, you know, exposed to academics. They're having environmental awareness. I see physical fitness attached to it.
There's nutrition.
Nutrition,
and
yes.
Representation.
Emotional and mental health. Mm-hmm. This is so cool.
Thank you.
Oh,
I love it. I love it. And like me, I don't have kids. I have a bunch of nieces and nephews. And my sister's like, I'm surprised at the career path that you chose to work with kids, because I've been a medical consultant for so long and now I'm kind of, my trajectory is changing, and the work that I do with Paddle for Peace is what fills my soul, and the work that I do on the side is what fills my pockets in order to, you know, fund and pay for the work with Paddle for Peace. So there's kind of like a balance. I didn't see myself here, but I love it.
What are all the ways that people can give back with Paddle for Peace?
So they can donate their time,
okay.
Volunteer, help us with our kids. They don't have to know how to surf. They can be mentors.
Yes.
They can, you know, help with grant writing. They can help with academics. And then donations, you know, in-kind donations if they have a product or a service that can benefit our programs. Financial donations and giving their time.
And I love
which that, you've done.
Yeah, thank you. It's like I love that you include the opportunity of time, open hands, right? The labor, those are things that people forget. They think that it's, I don't have money to give, so I can't, you know, donate or I can't help. But there's so many other parts to being human that we get to share what's on our backs with other people, whether it's tools or hand labor or just somebody to listen to a story.
Their heart.
Yes.
Time is the most valuable thing you can get.
Yes. Okay, so this all started with, and I think of like Maya Angelou when they always say, rather than being anti-war, be pro-peace. So you're coming at it with the tactic of like, hey, rather than having more hate come into this world, why don't we have a different alternative to how we can express our maybe frustration or just feelings or another way to be you. It's okay to be angry. I've learned like anger is a healthy thing to have and to feel, and it's a human thing for us, but there's ways to express it that are healthy and unhealthy. And so if you do that by keep pouring love into somebody else, that's a different way to deflect and channel your anger somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a great example for kids, that we don't have to just bash a negative with a negative, mm-hmm. that there is a way for kids to learn that there's love, even in spite of times that it feels like we're surrounded by hatred. Mm-hmm. So these kids are coming maybe from struggling areas or areas where they feel like they can't express themselves. You have a creative aspect to this, like you said, journaling. Mm-hmm. Have any of the kids shared their journals with you?
Some of them have, and some of them are very private.
Yeah.
And we try to respect both. In my mind, I feel like if they're sharing their journal, then they want me to see their pain. And what am I going to do with that?
Yep.
And then that's when all of like the healing work comes into place. And I know to pay more attention to that kid or give that kid more resources or more tools.
Yeah.
Because I grew up in foster care. And the person I am today, I wasn't back then. I was angry. I was self-centered. I was rude. I was sad. I was all of these things. And I had to learn through life, like how to not compartmentalize them, but how to deal with them, how to coexist. And I think it's very important to learn to coexist with your demons because sometimes you can't get rid of them. And battling them takes too much time and energy. So just be like, hey, we're on the same page. Like, sometimes you can come out, but I'm going to know how to deal with you. And sometimes you got to stay away, you know?
Yes.
So, you know, our kids are very special. I'm extremely protective over them. And the main thing is to just listen. And I think, like, as humans, especially children, all they want to do is, like, know that they are safe and have someone to listen to them and their problems and their issues and their pain and, like, you know, try to help fix it in some way. And if you can't fix it, just be that, like, safe space for them in order to, like, you know, talk about these things. And even adults, we want somebody to listen and we want somebody to be there for us and we want someone to comfort us. It's no different in children. You know, they have needs and they don't understand the big scary world around them. And so as adults and mentors and volunteers, we come in and we're kind of like their superhero. And we provide what we can for them so that they can grow up and have the tools that I didn't have or other people. They get like a head start, you know, it's like a cheat code. We're like, okay, I know you feel this big feeling, but this is how you manage it. And if you can't, these are the consequences. And so you try to give those life lessons and those gems and hope that they take it with them and utilize it in their world.
You answered something I was going to tap into next was not what the kids are sharing, but what do you think that they're trying to express by sharing with you? So if a kid is maybe not able to get that same type of attention at home, mm-hmm. or you say something how many times to your parents and they don't listen to you, it's in one ear, out the other, right? But you see somebody who not just sees you on the surface, but sees right through you. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, you're right, it gives that trust factor, that level of safety. The kid is coming to you for a reason. What are you going to do with that power, that responsibility of being aware of it? And you tapped something earlier too that I was like, wait a second, I'm just learning so much about you. Is you were in the foster care system as well. Mm-hmm. So what was Rissa's world like when you were growing up?
My world was very, it was very sad. Mm. It was very abusive. It was very scary. It was very uncertain. And the thing that I kind of had, it was like, you know, I was constantly spinning and all of these things were happening. I had my sister and she was my center when I was kind of going through things and vice versa. We were like homeless. We had all of these horrible things happen to us in the home of the people who are supposed to protect us. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of figuring out how to navigate that. And all of the trauma we went through shaped who we became in some way. Mm-hmm. We were kind of lost. We didn't have a head start. We didn't have help. We didn't have safe spaces. We didn't have a way to cope. But one thing I did have with my sister in my journal. And oftentimes I go back to my journal and like there's been times where I went back in complete sobbing. It's kind of like when you watch a movie that's very sad and it you know, does something to you.
Yes.
My old diaries did that to me because I was like, whoa. And it kind of serves as a reminder, like, girl, you survived that. Like literal hell, you can survive anything. And so I think with what I went through, it's kind of like, do I want to use it as a stepping stone or do I want to use it as a crutch? Mm-hmm. And I was like, this life sucks. I don't want to continue to live it. I don't want my nieces and nephews. I don't want my children. Mm-hmm. So what am I going to do? You know, I have X, Y, and Z thing that happened to me. And I was kind of like, all right, let me go to therapy. So I went to therapy. And really, the reason I went to therapy was because my boyfriend kept cheating on me. So that was like the beginning of it. I'm like, what am I going to do? You know, so I'm like, let's go to therapy. In that therapy session, she started to make me talk about my past. And that's when, and I was like 18, 19. And I was like, well, the first time I actually spoke out loud about what happened to me, I just like broke. And it was almost like the key to a locked door that was like overfilled with all of this, these secrets and this trauma and these horrible things that I was finally saying and it was coming out. And I think at that moment, I was like, whoa, there's some things I've got to deal with. Mm-hmm. And I went and I continued to talk to her, but then I started to have issues with vulnerability because me talking about all of these things were very painful. And I'm only with her for a certain amount of time and she can't relate. She wasn't in my situation and you know, she didn't have the experience I did. And then there's that cultural difference and there's all of these things. You're like, what do you mean this happened? Like, I could never imagine. Exactly. You can never imagine. So you might not be able to help me with this. Mm. And it started to become a thing for me. Like, I'm literally paying somebody to talk to me about my issues. It's kind of sad in my mind. Some people benefit from therapy. I'm somebody who doesn't. From that moment on, I'm like, now I'm alone. But now I'm aware of all of these issues that I have. What am I going to do to work through them? And I started to be like, okay, well, this relationship is this way because of this. And I started to realize my daddy issues and then my issues of being extremely poor. So then when I did get some money, I started buying Louboutins and Louis Vuitton and Gucci and all of these expensive things, putting myself into more debt just to please people to accept me and like me. And also I'm like, once I get a little bit of money, because I never had new shoes, never had new clothes. Once I get money, I'm going to buy and do all of these things. And once I did it, I'm like, now what? And then I'm like, now I need to move on to the next chapter of my life. Mm-hmm. And that is taking away all the material things that I thought would make me happy because it didn't. I still had these holes in my heart. I still had, you know, tears in my eyes. I still had anger. I'm like, well, the material things were nice, but now what? Mm-hmm. And then I started to go on a spiritual journey and the universe brought people into my life that really just magnified that, like my best friend. So after all of that, I got a job and I met this girl. She's a little, small, blonde, white girl. And she greeted me when I went in for my interview. Hello. And she's all bubbly and sweet. Would you like some water? And I'm like, oh, she's so annoying, right? Like, be quiet, you know? I ended up getting the job. Her name is Brittany. And from then, I was always annoyed by her, like, tenacity and her kindness and her bubbliness. And I had to think, like, why are you so annoyed by this girl? She's so nice. And I'm like, it's because I'm angry. And I never had anybody nice to me. And I never had the kindness. And I was just so standoffish and defensive and rude. And she never gave up. Good morning. Every morning. I'm like, oh, this girl. And over time, her love, her patience, her kindness, her perseverance is what kind of made me like soften and then soften more and then soften more. And she loved me through all of it. And it's very important. I tell people this all the time. Some people have the capacity to love people back to health. They have the capacity to love people into the light. And she did that for me, along with my sister. I was rude to my sister. I was mean. And my sister loved me unconditionally. Every time I'd tell her to fuck off, she'd fuck off. And then I'd be like, I miss her and I love her. And when I went back to her over and over again, she would never be like, I thought you said this. I thought you said that. She'd be like, come on, sissy. And it's that love, that like continuous love, that unconditional love that brought me out of that, you know? And I get emotional when I think about these things, because when I think about the love that certain people have given me, they've literally loved me out of like hell. And the way that I move in my life now, I want to give that to other people. And so that's how I move. I'm like, oh, there's so many people and so many friends and acquaintances and the kids. And, you know, sometimes it's difficult. It's normal to feel angry, like you said, and it's normal to be annoyed and it's normal to do this. But then I think back and I think about the love that I was given. And I'm like, I wouldn't be the person that I am today if it wasn't for certain people in my life. And now I want to become that. So.
Now we're here, girlfriend. Whoa.
Now we're here, girl.
So you've traveled all over the world. I see you in so many different countries, even just in this past year alone. I feel like building that cultural love for the world also gives you more to love for self. Like you have more love that you can give others, more love that you can give yourself, more compassion, all of that for just being a little bit more worldly.
Yeah, a little more cultured.
What do you think being cultured has taught you?
I think being culture has taught me different perspectives. I'm biracial. I'm half Black, half Chamorro. And I feel like the circumstances that I have dealt with are different from somebody in Southeast Asia or somebody in Mexico or somebody in, you know, Central America. And I was like, in order for me to truly live this life and be this person who wants to give love, I need to have an understanding of people and their differences and their lived experiences and their cultures and their religions. And so I'm like, well, now it's time to learn about it. Not only that, I get bored very easy and my mind is always turning and I'm always wanting to learn and experience. And the best way to do that is through travel and actually immersing yourself in experiences that allow you to connect with people and the country and the culture. So I think it's taught me to love deeper and it's taught me to have more of an open mind because we can't truly be human if we don't try to open our minds and hearts to other things that is like foreign to us, things that we don't know about, right? We live here in America. What about other people? What about there's maybe things that they do that is foreign to you. So if you're interacting with them, how are you able to do that compassionately and openly if you don't teach yourself about their culture or their lived experience? So
very humbling for ourselves to place ourselves in other people's shoes and what they could be experiencing, because I think even so many travelers that I see that speak English expect other people to speak English automatically just because they can't. So other people need to bend over backwards for you.
Like, why is English so superior? You know, we're the only country that, like, our culture does not teach us to be bilingual. Many other cultures are bilingual in their native and English. Lucky for us, English is universal, you know, but what if it wasn't?
And we get 2 years that were required in schools where most college, or like most, they call it secondary schools. Most secondary schools would have 4 years at least.
And then you can choose to go on or not.
And they teach you as little kids to not wait till high school.
Like my two nephews right now, they're 4 and 6. We have them in language immersion school. So they go to school where it's Spanish speaking. Because we're like, no. You know, my sister and I are travelers. We're very well cultured, and we want them to experience the same thing.
I
started young, girl. So I think travel is important for so many reasons, not just to be multicultural, But to experience things in life, there's so much in the world. There's so much that, like, I'm a solo traveler. There's so much that you find out about yourself when you're solo traveling. And if you ask some therapist, they're like, well, you solo travel as a trauma response. I'm like, girl, I'm healed. Okay. I just live for adventure. I like adventure. I like the newness of things. I crave new experiences, new people. And okay, I'll be honest, it could be a trauma response because I like my romances very, like, far away. I like travel romance. I like travel friendships. I like traveling. Mm-hmm. And when I'm here, I'm very focused on work and, you know, relationships, my friendships. But when I travel, it's like something else comes out of me and I feel very alive. Mm. And when I'm kind of in my home and very, like, routine, it's that missing part of feeling alive that travel gives me. And we don't know how long we're going to be here. The world is so beautiful and big. Go out and explore it, you know, and you'll be surprised at the relationships that you make and the things that you learn and the experiences you have. You step out of your comfort zone, and I feel like that's a necessity to grow. Mm. And yeah, I think everyone should travel. Even if you can't by yourself, do it with a group.
Did you go to school at all?
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Do you like this?
I'll let you drop out. So interesting. Because of where I am, a lot of people think I have, like, a master's in something.
Yeah, I'm really thinking that right now. I'm like,
I actually don't. I've been given the gift of entrepreneurship and creativity.
Yes.
And so I've been able to build success off of what the universe gave me. But because of my upbringing, like I told you, I moved around a lot, for mm-hmm. one. And then once I got to high school, I had to drop out because I had to work full time. Mm-hmm. And then we moved to San Diego. Well, we kind of lived here in the beginning, moved away, and then we moved back so that I could finish school and go to, like, a learning center. You know, when you go, like, 2 hours a day, mm-hmm. because I had to work two jobs. And I went there for a bit to try to graduate. I dropped out when I was a junior, and I was wilding out, partying, and I'm like, screw school. So I dropped out. I worked full-time, two jobs, and I didn't get my GED until I was, like, 23.
Oh, nice.
I did go to college, and then I was like, why am I going to college? Why do I need to depend on someone else to teach me success when I have the tools and resources that I need? If you knew about business, and I don't mean to, you know, down talk anyone's career or whatever, but I think, like, if you're so smart in business, why don't you have one?
Mm.
You're in school teaching us, you're making, you know, X amount of dollars, you're not reaching your full potential. And it's not just that, or it's not just job shaming. It became more of a mentality thing for me. I feel like school is necessary to teach certain components, you mm-hmm. know, but it's not necessary for everything. So I was like, I don't want to do this. But when I was a child, my dream was to be a nurse so I can care for people and do this and that. So I did go to college, and then I went mm-hmm. to nursing school. I got denied the first time. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to give up, you know, my discipline. No. I had to retake a class. I applied again. And then COVID hit. And then my sister got sick. And so I'm like, do I really want to do nursing? Because I also had it. So when I was 18, I was a medical assistant. I worked in the medical field from then until now. My career is medical consulting. So I start clinics for doctors.
Wow.
So the company I was working for, where I met my best friend, they promoted me to open up a clinic for them. And it was wound and ostomy care. So I started the clinic, and while going to nursing school and doing all of that, in hopes to become a nurse. And then COVID hit. We had to let go of some of our staff. So we had a team meeting, and the doctors were like, why don't you just work as a nurse? You've been doing medical care. You started the clinic. We'll teach you everything you need to know. And so there are certain things I can do. So I was seeing patients with the doctors for 2 years as a medical assistant, but I also got experience to the nursing side of it. And I was like, do I really want to do this? Do I want to work in a hospital? Do I want to work in an institution? Do I want to have school? Like, all this college debt. And I was like, my heart is in entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, and I have Paddle for Peace. So I ended up, you know, doing all that. And then we closed the clinic, and I was like, what am I going to do now? Start your own business. Duh. It's been a while. Like, you've been thinking about it. Just do it. Stop, like, half-assing it. you know, depending on the security of a job, the 401k, the financial security, you're always going to have a check every 2 weeks. You don't really have to work too hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did it. I left my job in March and I started, you know, really going hard with Power for Peace. I'm starting a wellness company. I still do my consulting on the side and I have the freedom, which was super important for me, you know, so.
Backtracking, because it's crazy to hear this whole background in medical.
So I don't have a degree. I don't have a degree.
Don't have a degree, but you're still strong in the medical field.
I'm still strong in the medical field, and I make more than people with masters in some situations. And that's the reality. I mean, I work harder, you know, 12, 13-hour days, but I make six figures without a college degree. And I'm not saying it's for everybody. You have to have the skill and the tenacity and the discipline to start or run a company. And that's what I do.
That's great advice for anybody wanting to start a business as well. It's the skill and the will and tenacity to do all of that.
And you also have to know, if you fail, okay, go back and get a job and figure it out. There's always going to be jobs. Don't let the fear of, you know, failure stop you from doing what you feel in your heart you're destined to do.
Word.
Word to mama. So...
Okay, you brought up therapy for going, you were 18, 19 years old.
Yep.
I feel like I need to hear this because I'm like the voice inside of me is like, oh my gosh, maybe this is advice for me right now. So I have been on and off with therapy for a very long time. And I just had an appointment that I was going to go to. And completely self-sabotaged it. My appointment was for 7 p.m. I went and put my butt to bed at 1 o'clock in the afternoon and slept all the way through the night even. Like, slept 16 hours. I was like, how is this possible? How could someone be so tired? And I felt like just the thought of going exhausted me, drained me. And I've had my own traumas before with having therapists be really close to people who hurt me, where I didn't know who I could trust. I didn't know if my words were going to be used against me. I had it with my parents growing up, where the therapist was always telling my parents what I was saying or doing, or if there was anything that could be, I don't want to say the word, like maybe mischievous, but if it's like I'm snuck out and I didn't tell my parents, right? Like then the therapist would tell them. So I'm like, there's like a lot of trust issues that I don't feel confident going to a therapist at some points. Do I feel like I have a great therapist? Yes. But I ask myself that time and time again, is this really helping me? Are there other ways that people can get help? And I'm curious if you still are have gone back to therapy and what the experience has been like for you, or what do you consider to be therapy for you? Because I feel like there are different ways that I can go about therapy versus just talk therapy.
So with you, I know in the past, you know, you've said things like, I've had X amount of therapists over the years. Yes. I'm self-sabotaging. I keep switching. I keep this. Whatever the reason is, the most important thing is you're listening to your heart and you know these people are not beneficial to your journey. So that's nothing against you. But you have to look at the pattern. If you keep going to therapy and you keep giving money and there's no results, therapy's not for you, girl. You need to start looking outside of the box. And what I said earlier, if you surround yourself with people who have unconditional love, they're well cultured, they've done the work, and they also have demons, let your demons play with theirs and let them love you back to health. Because a lot of the times people go to therapy and you're literally paying your hard-earned money just for someone to listen to you. And I don't want to get canceled for this, but it's sad. Some people genuinely need therapy. There are people who genuinely have something wrong mentally and they can't break that barrier. Therapy might be beneficial for them, but certain people don't benefit from therapy. And when you don't, stop doing the same thing over and over. It's very repetitive. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of money. Find other avenues. You know, there's some people who have to be on medication. Do it. And I say this with confidence because mental illness runs extremely rampant in my family. I have anxiety. I have uncles who've lost their mind, siblings who have lost their mind. Like, not just, oh, you're so crazy, like legitimate schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, hallucinations, we have mental illness that runs very rampant in our family, and some benefit from therapy and others don't. And you have to realize, like, when therapy is not working, the universe is telling you to do something more. And this is not just a cliche thing I'm saying. There can be other avenues. Like, go, you know, in the middle of the jungle and meditate for 28 days. Mm-hmm. Go do darkness therapy. Surround yourself with people who are light workers, who have the capability to love you back to health. And sit with your demons and be like, dude, what the fuck? Why do you keep coming up and bothering me? Like, what do we have to do so you can stay at bay and I can coexist with you and live a happy, healthy life,
yes,
and have healthy relationships and not be depressed and not be anxious and not be fearful and not be upset and not be angry? What do we got to do? And you have to have those hard conversations with your demons and be like, yo, figure it out. Like, we have to figure this out, mm-hmm, because you have no other choice. Mm-hmm. Life is such a beautiful gift. You don't want to waste it under dark clouds. You don't want to waste it in misery. You don't want to let depression win and overrule you. And so if therapy is not working, my advice is to look outside of the box in whatever way that is, you know, like people say, oh, yoga is so calming and everyone is so hippie. And do you know why people do yoga and they meditate and they do all these hippie things? It's because they're fucking crazy. Yes. And they've lost their mind. And they're like, I need an outlet. I need to change my life. I need something to help me. That's why they go to yoga. People aren't born hippies. They're not born spiritual and all. They find spirituality because they're crazy. And they're miserable at some point.
Word.
Or they've had some kind of trauma happen to them.
Yes.
Case in point. I'm Reiki certified. I do yoga. I meditate. I burn sage. I play with my crystals. I do light work. And I did all of that because I had like such a hellish past and therapy wasn't working. And I didn't like the idea of sharing my demons with someone who's just there to listen, who I'm going to report you if you say X, Y, and Z. By the way, if you want me to listen, you have to pay me. Mm. And by the way, I have no like idea of the pain that you actually feel. I just know what I was taught in school. I just know what the textbooks told me, mm-hmm, and I'm going to try to help you. I just don't think that's right for everybody.
That was really intense and really good. I was like, okay, I'm listening. I swear I'm going to obey and do all the things now. You embarked on this spiritual journey. Obviously, you said you had a tough past, mm-hmm, as well. But that's something that we had just mentioned earlier was the anger and all of these unhealthy things that people can go about expressing themselves. How has spirituality taught you how to express yourself in healthy ways? What have you done that you feel like is your biggest self-expression? I feel like Paddle for Peace has been one of your biggest self-expressions.
It's my baby.
Yes.
It's a way that I can give love that continues to give. Because what I'm giving is something that like someone might resonate with. And then when I die and become dust. Because by the way, everyone that we love, everyone that we know, including ourselves, is going to be gone in the wind, dust. Mm-hmm. You're going to become some dusty picture on the wall. And when your family, your great-great-grandchildren, who's that? My great-great-grandmother, do you know her? No. Do you care? Not really. They're so old, like 30 decades old. Who gives a shit? What have you done to make sure your legacy lives on? Mm-hmm. And that's giving and pouring into our youth so that you can impact someone who then grows up to make the same, you know, impact that you've done. And then they do the same to the youth after that. Because as a spiritual person, you know that like you're just in like a skin suit having a human experience that will end. Everything that you know, everyone that you love, your life, what you've accomplished, how much money you have, the car you drive, the home you live in, how much travel, all gonna be gone. It's not gonna matter. But what have you done as a human to make an impact? Mm-hmm. On someone's life, because the world is a cruel place. There's a little slice of heaven that you can offer people to help them navigate this dark world. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's the most important thing. And knowing that you're going to go wherever you're going to go, whatever you believe in, I'm not religious, but you go to wherever you think God is going to send you, mm-hmm, and then you make an impact while you're on earth. The most valuable thing is your time. Mm-hmm. And what you're giving to others and how you spend your time. You want to make it fun. The adventure must continue. You have to live a life that you have stories to tell and you have wisdom to share. You can't heal people. You can't love people unconditionally. You can't add to anyone's life unless you make sure that your life is in order and you have the experience, you have the knowledge, you have the wisdom, you have the lived experiences that get you to where you're going. You can't read a book and be like, now I'm a coach. Now I'm a light worker because I went to a 12-day retreat in Bali. You have to actually have experiences that shaped you. You have to deal with some kind of pain. Mm-hmm. Because like I said, your demons need to be able to play with other demons. Because that's the only relatability factor. Our pain brings us closer. And then we can heal together. And spread healing all around. And we just do the best we can. It's not about perfection. It's not about everyone being zen and calm and patient and kind. It's about being real. And be like, you're fucked up. You got to do X, Y, and Z to get through it. And let me tell you why this will work. Or let me tell you why this is not working. Mm-hmm. But most importantly, let me tell you that I see you. And I feel you. And I resonate with what you're saying. And like, that's really all we need. We need like a little cradle for our pain. You know, mm-hmm. like we need to feel and know that people see us and we feel our pain. And like I said, like my sister and my best friend loved me back to health. I want to give that to others and I want people to know how important unconditional love is. And sometimes it's like, oh my God, she's going through so many issues and I'm going through my issues. That's the fine print of relationships. You're going to have to deal with other people's shit. You're going to have to deal with their problems. But guess what? When you need your shit dealt with and you have your problems, guess who you call? Your people, your loved ones. Mm-hmm. And if you don't want to do that, then you stay alone in the corner with your problems, living a lonely, miserable existence. And good luck to you. No one's going to remember you when you die. I'm kidding. But, you know, in reality.
I think of like yin and yang. And so when you had mentioned you need to look at your demons and sit and talk with them and not just, we can't just like brush them under the rug.
Not today.
Yeah. We can maybe say like not today, yeah. but they'll be back tomorrow, you know? Yeah. So we live life with our demons by our sides. That is part of the human experience, right? And I love that you say that. I'm not religious. Who knows where we end up after? Mm-hmm. I feel like kind of the same thing as the flowers in the fields, right? If they drop all their petals and their pollen spreads wherever, that's just where our energy went throughout our lifetime. Yeah. And how we give our resources back to the world, that's maybe, you know, however it may be. But I love that you mentioned something earlier, and I see it in so many different forms where people say, like, you don't get any other option. Like, you have to do this, or otherwise you die and everybody forgets about you, and that's it. Like, that's your life is over, right? I love that with the sound effects. And I just read in the book, I'm rereading this book, Untethered Soul, and mm-hmm. actually reading it with a new level of awareness rather than like skimming through it like I thought mm-hmm. I could before. No. So reading this book, it's like talking to that inner voice of thoughts or all the negativity or whatever you want to call that demon factor of your life. Mm-hmm. You need to take control of it as if your life depended on it. That I feel like is the...
It does.
Yes, our life does depend on it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're controlled by that.
You honestly are.
Yeah.
And the thing is, when I say what I say, it's not to be like dismissive of therapy and different people's needs. Because people need different things.
Yes.
But I can say it with confidence because I was here and now I'm here. I was abused in every way imaginable. I had nothing. I was homeless. Had no parents. I had to drop out of school. I had to, you know, you could look at it and say, she was abused. She was left alone. She wasn't taught anything. She wasn't this. She wasn't that. Now I'm proud to say I got through X, Y, and Z because I did this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. You can do that as well. And that's why I like working with the kids that I work with because I see myself in them. And I'm like, don't worry, I got you. Like, I got you. This is not your life. It's not your end. And where you start, you don't have to like stay there. You know what I mean? And so with my knowledge of not dismissing the things that are real, like people of color and the microaggressions and the unfairness that we face and all of these things because of our race and then our experiences, whether we're in broken homes, we're abused, our education, we didn't go to college. These things are very real factors that can dictate the trajectory of someone's life, but it doesn't have to be a one-all be-all. And I'm living proof of that. And I'm not saying I'm perfect, but I have wisdom to offer. And clearly what I'm doing is working in some way. Mm-hmm. I still have lots of work to do. but I want to continuously learn and at least give people the wisdom that I've, you know, that I have mm-hmm. to help them get through whatever they're going through. And my way isn't like a one-all be-all. It might not work for you, but I have such an open mind and an open heart. I will stick with you until we figure out your shit, you know? And that's just what I was put on earth for. That's why I'm in the medical field. That's why I started a nonprofit. It's why, you know, I do X, Y, and Z, because I'm fulfilled when I help people and I feel it's truly my calling. And I feel like I have enough room in my backpack to carry my demons and yours, you know? And so...
You must have a big backpack.
Girl, I have, like, big backpack. But I carry it with pride because when I love deep and it's unconditional. Because it's magic.
It is magic. You mentioned your sister got sick.
Mm-hmm.
And this was around 2020 as well?
Yeah, 2020, yep.
So what was her diagnosis or her situation? Was she sick with?
So... I remember, like, clear as day, we were on lockdown, and then all of a sudden I heard her say, Rissa, and I'm like, what? I was in the middle of doing X, Y, and Z. She comes out in her towel, she's like, feel this. And I immediately, like, you know, again, because of my past, I have certain coping mechanisms, and sometimes when things are unsavory to me or they're painful, I will block it out. And I have a thing where I block it out so much, I kind of forget about it sometimes. And that's something I'm working on to be aware of. So as soon as she said, feel this, my defenses immediately went up.
Yeah.
And I felt down like, oh, it's just a cyst. My family comes to me with all their medical issues all the time. So I'm like, oh, it's a cyst. You'll be fine. But in the back of my mind, I started to let fear creep in. And I'm a big manifester. So I'm like, don't even, out of sight, out of mind. Because it was COVID, like the clinics were shut down. She couldn't get in for a while. And every day she's like, it's growing, it's growing, it's growing. And I'm like, okay. So
could you tell it was growing too?
Yep. And in my mind, I'm like, yeah, I know. My medical mind, I'm like, this is not right. But my spiritual mind, I'm like, don't give it any attention. Because the universe doesn't know whether it's bad or negative. They just know you're giving something attention.
Even saying, don't give it.
Don't give it. That's, still giving it attention. So I'm like, God dang it. But it's hard when it's someone you love.
Yes. Yes.
So I remember... she ended up going to the doctor, you know, like weeks later. She got her testing done. We were at my uncle's house. I think it was Thanksgiving. It was Thanksgiving or a little bit before Christmas. Or no, it was Mother's Day. Yep, it was Mother's Day. We were at my uncle's house and you know, we're just awaiting the results. So I cooked dinner and I went up there and I'm like, I went upstairs and I'm like, hey, dinner's ready. She's like, I'm not hungry. I immediately knew. I was like, nope. Like, because I'm like, she got her results back. Like, I know my sister, like, the back of my hand. She's literally the other half of it. And so I went downstairs. I'm like, just act like everything's okay. But in my heart, I'm like dying. I'm like, I already know. And I'm going to wait for her to call me and say something. My sister's also very stubborn. She kind of like dances around things a little bit. So we're downstairs eating and I see her come down and her eyes are puffy. And I'm like, hey, I put some food in the microwave, you know, and at this point I'm using my avoidance tactic. Knew. And then she's like, okay, I'll eat later. And she goes back upstairs. But like her just coming down and letting herself be seen, I already knew she's calling me. So I go upstairs and I just sit on the bed and we just start crying. I'm like, okay. So after we're done crying, I'm like, show me. And sure enough, they're like, you have cancer. It's triple negative. It's the most aggressive one. So I'm like, okay, after I was done crying, because I'm not a crier, I'm not very vulnerable at times. Like, I'm kind of the strong one in my family, and I don't show emotion often. So I'm like, okay, be strong for her. My aunt comes upstairs, she sees both of us, and she's just like, tell me. And she starts crying. Everyone's crying. So I walk out, and I start crying. Like, and when I mean crying, I mean, like, I've never cried like this in my life, even in my past. Like, you know, because a lot of it was, like, when I was, you know, in my past, it was, like, be strong and get through this, and then... you know, deal with
cry
it later.
Yeah.
Cry later.
Yeah.
And so growing up, that's always what I adopted. So the next day I'm like, I got to go to work. So instead of being there for her and staying, I was like, nope, got to work because now she's not going to be able, this is how my mind works. She's not going to be able to work. I have to take care of the family. I got to be strong and I have to distract because the most important person in my life is now diagnosed with cancer. Next to death, it's the worst thing that can happen. So I remember on my ride, I was driving back down to San Diego. I literally had to pull over because the veins in my neck and my head were about to burst. That's how hard I was crying. And I was like, I can't, but like my world came tumbling down. Mm-hmm. So I went to work and then, you know, we started our journey and I was like, you know, maybe I should get tested. So I went and got my testing done. Everything came back negative. So now I'm in protector mode. I have my nephew to care for and I have my sister to care for. And I was like, how am I going to do this? If I didn't do the healing that I needed to do to get to where I am, I wouldn't have been able to handle it. I would have left her alone because selfishly, it would have been too painful for me to watch her go through this. And I wouldn't have been able to give her what she needed. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as the healed version of myself, I'm like, okay, let me try my best. So, you know, went through the journey, went with her to chemo every day. And it was extremely difficult because watching someone you love, trying to get away from it, right? You don't want to stay near the thing that's hurting you, mm-hmm. but you also need to be there. But you're also not sick. So how could you really give them what they need? Mm. It's like when someone dies, let me know if you need anything, or because you don't know what to say. You're not experiencing it firsthand. Yes. So you could do as much as you can, but it's not going to help. And I remember one day, anytime she would cry, I would not cry. I would cry after. I would be straight faced. I would give her that safe space, listen to her and try to be positive. And one day I was in the kitchen and she just came and she's like, you know, when you don't cry with me, I feel so alone. Uh-huh. And I was like light bulb. And I was like, okay. And I felt myself already like the wall was coming up. Don't cry, be strong.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, like, what do you want me to do? Sit with you in your misery? No, I'm trying to be positive. And we start arguing back and forth. But the light bulb already went off. I knew exactly what she was saying. I knew exactly what she needed now. But before that, I didn't know that. So after we start arguing for a bit, I let my walls down. I'm like, well, because I got a lot of tears. You just don't see it. And so we start crying. And I'm like, okay, but, you know, X, Y, and Z, we need to be positive. She's like, but it's not positive. I'm losing my hair. I'm fighting for my life. What? My son's going to be without a mother. You have to watch me suffer. Like, all of these things. And she's like, it's not okay. And it's not positive. And so I'm like, okay, another light bulb. We need to be able to be in our pain and just let it be negative. It's something called toxic positivity. Mm-hmm. If someone is literally crying their heart out, don't go and say, it's going to be all right. Look at the bright side. Look at the silver lining. Fuck your silver lining. Fuck your bright
yes.
side.
Yes.
I'm in pain and I need you to be there with me.
Yes.
And certain relationships don't have the ability to do that. But my sister and I, we do. Because I do have tears, you know, and I am fearful and I am this. So it was important for us to have those moments and grow from it. So it's funny. Because she's like, you don't know what I'm going through. Little did I know, I was about to find out. Because like 4 months later, we were like, you know, sitting. So she went through her surgery and everything, right? And we got through that. 4 months later, after I got all of my negative testing, I did my genetics, negatives for every cancer gene, no mammogram, ultrasound, you're clear. 4 months later, I found my lump. And I'm like, that's weird. I was like, okay. Let me go and get it checked. My doctor was like, oh, it looks like it's a benign mass, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, I still want to get a biopsy.
Yeah, something still feels off.
Yeah, I know my body. I'm very in tune. I know when there's a new mole or a small freckle on my body. That's how in tune with myself I am. I'm like, it just doesn't feel right. She's like, okay, we'll biopsy it. She biopsied it. It came back as something called hyperplasia, mm-hmm. which is kind of like pre-cancer. It's like weird cells. It's mm-hmm. like, it's not pre-cancer, but it could be. She's like, oh, you have hyperplasia. We'll just keep an eye on it. I'm like, we're not going to keep an eye on it. We're going to take it out. And I had to advocate for myself, not only because of my medical background, but just how I felt spiritually. And then my sister's situation. I'm like, something's not right. So they took it out and they're like, it's benign. You're fine. I'm like, good. Well, at least it's out because we shouldn't have lumps in our boobs.
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, like, I think like 5 or 6 months go by and I feel another one. I didn't even say anything. I'm like, I have cancer. I already know it. So because I have cancer, I've always wanted to like solo backpack. I've never traveled alone. So I'm like, I'll go on a trip because I know this is going to be the last of the life as I know it. So I packed my bags and I went to Central America and I did a solo backpacking trip. I've always been like terrified of scuba diving. Even as a mermaid, I'm like deep, dark, unknown water, like relying on a man-made tool to breathe.
Yes.
Like, no way. I went and did it. I faced my fears. I kind of went to like an, it's like I sprouted because I already knew inside. I knew it was cancer. Like I just knew it. And by the way, I'm feeling as I'm there just to make sure it's not growing. If it's growing, I'll come back a little sooner.
Yeah.
But other than that, I'm going to like relish in this moment. Sure enough, I came back, went immediately to the doctor and they're like, oh, we'll do a biopsy. I'm like, yeah, yeah, do what you want. I already know. Like there's no way it's not. So they did the biopsy, and I remember, this is funny how the universe works. I worked from home at the time. So I went and got my biopsy. It was like a week went by. Nobody's calling me. My boss ended up calling a meeting, so I had to go into the office where my best friend works. So I'm sitting there. We do the meeting. I'm like, dude, they literally haven't called me. I'm sitting in her office. The meeting's over. I'm in her office. Ring, ring. And I'm like, this is a weird number. She's like, answer it. I was like, hello. They're like, hi, you know, this is your doctor.
Yeah.
And she's like, the tone of her voice, I started shaking.
Yeah.
I'm like, she's like, I'm sorry to say it's cancer. Anything she said after that, I don't even remember. I just like broke down. My best friend was there. How crazy for me to get the call that's literally going to change my life. That did change my life. My best friend is there to help me when I'm like in the most trying times.
Mm-hmm.
So I was diagnosed, and yeah, it was a crazy journey.
Why do you think people wait until they're about to die to go do the things that they really want to go do? Like backpacking Central America.
Exactly. But the thing is, so it's funny because people say, now that you had cancer and you were about to die, did you feel like you started living life to the fullest? No, that was the one thing. But if you look at like, you know, my past life and my photos, I always lived a crazy life.
Yes.
I always traveled. I always did crazy things. I would always say, I love my life. I was so appreciative. I knew how important life was. Mm-hmm. So that was actually one lesson that I didn't learn to appreciate life. No, I already appreciate. I literally lived life like I was going to die tomorrow, even before my sister.
Mm-hmm.
So that backpacking thing was just like one thing on my to-do list. So it was more so time. It was more so time that I learned. Like, why are you so cocky to think you have time? I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it next year. I'll do it this. I was going to get to the backpacking, you know, but cancer just sped it up. I was like, I need to do it now. And so it was more so time. Like, don't be so cocky to think you have tomorrow or later, or I'll call her later. Call your friend now. How do you know you or her will be alive later? Or I'll do that thing. I'll start that business. I'll go to school. I'll start doing art. I'll start now.
That's a huge lesson that a lot of people don't. So the sense of urgency, it's not that you weren't already living life to the fullest, but you were prioritizing the things that you really wanted to accomplish.
Yeah.
And I think that so many people in this world do exactly that. I'll start my business tomorrow. I'll start my Spanish lessons and my, you know, I'm going to clean the dishes later. I'm going to do all this. I'm going to call my family, all of that, because we'll expect everybody to wake up tomorrow and it'd be another day.
You think you have time?
Yeah.
You truly don't know. So I always loved life, girl. It was always an adventure for me. It was more so the time and the vulnerability with what I learned. Because, okay, so I was diagnosed and I'm like, well, great. What am I going to do with Paddle for Peace? I still have to show up for my community. What am I going to do with my vulnerability? Holy shit. I'm about to lose my hair, my brows, my lashes. My sister did something called cold capping, where it helps to preserve your hair. It's a hit or miss. She ended up keeping a lot of her hair. But after chemo, because it stays in your body, she started to lose everything. So she had to shave her head. I'm like, no, because when I was doing your cold capping, I was miserable. I was getting burned by the dry ice. We would argue because it was a lot. I had to change her cap every 15 minutes for 8 hours.
Oh, wow.
And there's 4 caps. So you have to keep, it was like labor intensive.
Yeah.
On top of me trying to deal with my emotions of seeing her suffer. I'm like, I don't want to put you through that. She's like, I owe you. I was like, yep, you sure do.
Yes.
So I ended up doing cold capping. I still lost 50% of my hair.
Okay.
But I was like, okay, I need to not. The reason I didn't say what I was going through when I was diagnosed was because of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. The vulnerability, and I didn't want to be seen as like the sick person. I didn't want cancer to become my identity. And I'm a leader in every sense of the word. And a lot of people depend on me. And I didn't want that to change. I didn't want people to be like, oh, the pity party. And, oh, let's enable her. No, I need you to treat me normally. Mm-hmm. I need to still work. I need to still be there for my friends. Some of my friends, if you are going through something and you don't tell me and let me be there for you, mm-hmm. I'm not going to let you be there for me. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay. So we were able to share. So I hid it for an entire year. I was still doing Paddle for Peace events. I was still showing up in my community. I was gaining weight. My hair was falling out. I had no lashes, no brows. I had to like hide it, you know? So I went through my journey and I was like, it was painful, you know? But luckily I had the skills and the resources, which is my spirituality, mm-hmm. to get me through it. I'm like, cancer didn't happen to you. It happened for you. So you need to figure out how to extract the lessons and, you know, make it work. The hardest thing for me was like my sister. Now the roles are reversed. Now I know what she was going through. When you get sick, it's very, very lonely because nobody knows what you go through. I was lucky because my sister had been through it. Mm-hmm. She knew exactly what I was feeling. She gave me exactly what I needed. And then the guilt started to kick in because I'm like, now I know why she wanted me to cry with her.
Yes.
Because she felt alone. It's very lonely. You know, you could try to be there for people, but you truly don't know what they're going through until you go through it. And then I was like, okay with dying. Honestly, I was like, the only worry that I had was the pain it would inflict to those who loved me, because I was so happy and satisfied with my life because I lived such an epic life before I got sick. And that was one of the things I tell people. Don't wait until you get sick to live an epic life. Do mm-hmm. all things so that if you do end up on your deathbed, you're like, yo, make a movie about my life and let it inspire others, or write a book or tell people my story. You don't be like, oh, yeah, that's Sally and she passed away. Well, what was she like? Mm-hmm. Don't really remember. Unimportant. Didn't matter. She waited to do this. She didn't do that. She didn't give back. She didn't make an impact. I don't remember much about her. You don't want to be that person. Or like, oh, wait, God, I have to go on that trip. Wait, God, don't take me yet. I need to call that person. Too late.
Time is not waiting for anybody.
Mm-mm.
And you even talked about your body image mm-hmm. in a sense of you didn't have your hair, you didn't have your lashes, right? You're gaining weight is what you mentioned. And I literally was going to tap into this right before you brought that up too, yeah. was how do you feel like your image evolved or changed, and how were you able to blossom out of it? So body image is one thing.
Yeah.
Being the leader of Paddle for Peace is another thing.
Yeah.
I think of you as for a period you weren't surfing. Mm-hmm. That's part of your image and identity too. So how did your identity change, evolve, blossom? Appreciation, all of it.
It was a difficult journey. And the reason, the one and only reason it became difficult was because I was holding on so tight to who I was. And it wasn't until I had a funeral for the old me that I was able to blossom. I had to grieve that. I had to relish in her memory, go through everything that she did, what she looked like, who she was before cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to smile at all the things that she did and how she looked and what she did and all of these things, experiences. And then I had to go through bereavement and anger, sadness, and like it's a death. The old you is gone. She's not gonna look the same. She's not gonna feel it. She might not even be alive. Let go of her. Like mm-hmm. she's done, she's gone, she did what she could. Now you need to step into the new you and allow yourself to be in this situation and grow from it. Like I said, you can allow your experiences to be a crutch, or you can allow it to be a stepping stone. I was like, all right, cancer, let's do this. You really effed with the wrong one. For one, you're not going to be my identity. For two, I'm still going to do the things I love and want to when I can.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing was the mental work that I did before this allowed me to deal with it. Because before, I was a little sex kitten.
Okay.
I was so confident. I was like, I felt good in my body. I had abs. I had beautiful, long, curly hair. I felt beautiful every day. I loved dressing up. I was in shape. I surfed every day. Now you go to someone losing my beautiful curly hair, losing my brows, losing my eyelashes, gaining weight. I'm still 30 pounds overweight today. But I was like, you know what? I even did a photo shoot with somebody. My friend Bo hit me up and he's like, oh, let's do this photo shoot. I was literally bald and I had no lashes and I was super fat, barely fit in my wetsuit. But I still did the photo shoot because I'm like, I'm not going to let this like determine who I, like how I look, let that determine how I feel about myself. Mm-hmm. And looks wasn't my only thing. I didn't focus so much on my looks to begin with. I knew I was beautiful, but that wasn't the core of my being. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to look and depend on the other qualities that I had. Because you can be so beautiful and then you're not funny. You're not smart.
Strong.
You're not strong. Mm-hmm. You're not kind. You're not loving. So all you have is your beauty. What happens when that goes away? Mm. And that's exactly what happened to me. But I had all of these other qualities to lean on, which mm-hmm. helped me find the beauty in myself again. And so I'm like, okay, you could be fat and hide, or you'd be fat and go out into the world and be like, I'm fat because of this, but watch me get back into shape. Or if I can't lose weight, which is hard for me now, watch me like relish in the beauty that I am now, because the old me is gone. I don't even, done. Doesn't matter. And so now I have nothing to compare it to. Right? Because when we live so far in the past, that's where all the fear and depression come from.
Yeah.
When we live too far in the future, that's where all the anxiety comes from.
Yeah.
So it's like, do I want to be anxious or depressed? Nope. Let me focus on it now. So I just was like, this is me, you know? And not only that, like my womanhood was taken from me. I got a double mastectomy. So now I have scars all over the place. Mm-hmm. They took the fat from my stomach. I didn't have fat to begin with. He's like, let's take from your thighs. I'm like, leave the thighs alone.
Yeah.
Thick thighs save lives.
Yes, they do.
So he's like, oh, you might have complications with your stomach. We don't have enough fat because it's a tummy tuck to rebuild my boobs. And I'm like, don't care. Let's do it. It'll be easier to hide. So we did that. It's something called a deep flap. So they took the skin and the fat from my stomach and rebuild my boobs with it. And she did a great job. Yeah. Shout out to Dr. Reed and the team. But because my stomach was like a little flat, my wound kept opening. Mm. So even at Juneteenth, I had a big gash in my stomach. Like Juneteenth of that year when I had surgery in 2022. I was like doing all of it. Like with the surgery, I couldn't walk for 3 weeks. I was using a walker and I was hunched over. I lost movement in my arms. And I was miserable, couldn't surf, couldn't get out of bed, didn't feel pretty, did all the things that I used to do. I was confined to my bed.
And still showed up.
Still showed up and still did what I had to do. And nobody yeah. knew what I was going through.
Yeah.
But the thing is.
Because like, that's your identity.
It is. Yeah. This is me, you know. But I was happy within myself and I did the mental work and I loved who I was as a person. So I was able to sit alone with her. But imagine if I didn't love who I was, how miserable. And I just couldn't wait to get back to the life that I lived. And a big motivation was, again, me always thinking of other people. I'm like, how can I use my journey to inspire people? Mm-hmm. Had I shared my journey when I was going through it, all I would have received is like, oh, are you okay? Oh, poor Marissa. Oh, poor. And that's just enabling behavior. And you're like, you know, it's the negativity that's like, you know, they don't even mean to do it. It's just negativity for me because anything that yeah. doesn't uplift me is bringing me down. And that would have brought me down. I'd be like, yeah, poor me. You know? So I was like, let me share it after to be like, all right, guys, I went through hell and now I'm back. You know, this is like, let my story be a testament to how you can pull strength from the depths of hell and you can bounce back from hard times. Mm-hmm. And so I shared it publicly, which also taught me about vulnerability. I was literally sweating bullets when I posted it. I'm like, God, what am I doing? Oh my God.
I think you had a photo shoot for that as yep. well, right?
So my friend Sydney, I was like, I'm about to lose my boobs. Let's do a photo shoot. So what better place than the beach? And I went to the beach and I let my tits out and we did a photo shoot so that I could remember, not necessarily dwell on it, but mm-hmm. just be like, oh, that's what they looked like before. And like capture the last image of me as myself, mm-hmm. you know? So here we are.
What do you feel like that moment was the second you found out you were cancer free and the choices that you want to make in life moving forward?
So it's a little tricky, right? Because cancer is a tricky thing. They don't like to say you're in remission, especially with breast cancer.
Yeah.
So I'm on treatment for the next 5 years. I'm in medical menopause. So that means hot flashes, like my joints hurt every day. I have the body of an old lady right now. I'm 30 pounds overweight. It's extremely difficult to lose weight. And so I'm still dealing with the effects from it. Like my medication makes my hair fall out. I'm always tired. But even with all of these things, I don't let it dictate my life. I'm like, nope, I'm not cut open and I'm not hooked to an infusion machine. I'm going to get out and live my life and continue to do the best I can within my ability. And a lot of that comes with my love for living and my love for adventure, inspiring others, and my stubbornness to not let the things in life affect the quality of my life. You don't get to do that. Like, whether it's people or situations, I'm not giving you the power to take away from my life because it's a life that I'm living. The quality depends on me. And you don't get to do that. You don't get to get my power. You don't get my happiness. You don't get it. No.
Yes.
I keep it for me. And I surround myself with other people who help me grow and who give back to me, not the negative things that happen to us and not the negative people. So I'm just like, well, don't know how long I'm going to live. Like, you know what I mean? It's grim, but it's a reality. I don't know. Is it going to come back? Don't know. I'm on this treatment for 5 years. What about after that? My cancer was estrogen fed. As a woman, I produce estrogen.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, like, you have these thoughts and they can be debilitating. So I choose not to think about it. It happened and now I'm moving on along. If it happens again, I'll deal with it then. Until then, life is great. You know, like the things that exist is what we give power to and what we give thought. Like, this wall behind me doesn't exist because I'm not looking at it. As soon as I turn to the mirror, I'm like, oh, look at that mirror. But when I'm here, it's just me and you.
Yeah.
Because I'm giving attention to you. Mm-hmm. So you exist. So I think we shouldn't give attention to negative things. I think whether it be cancer or situations, just don't. And it's not like psyching yourself out.
Mm-hmm.
You're still aware, right? But you're not like, oh my God, I have cancer, so I'm going to live in fear every single day. I'm not going to have that glass of wine. I'm not going to do this because cancer, because cancer. Why are you giving it so much power? It's not here now, so why are you living in fear? It's such a prison to live in fear. You got to let it go. If you're going to die tomorrow, you're going to die. There's literally nothing you can do. There's no amount of blueberries and apples you can eat to keep sickness away. If you're going to get sick, you're going to get sick. I was a vegan who worked out every single day, and I still got cancer. So there's like trainers who have heart attacks. There's like nuns who get in car accidents. It's the reality, you know?
I think back to the book, The Power of Now. And that it's
I've heard of that book.
Yes. And I'm like, I just need to reread all these books right now. But when I read this, it was like 2018. And you had even touched on the topic of being in depression or being in anxiety, mm-hmm. whether we're in the past or the future. Mm-hmm. And I think of all the things that you had even mentioned, Bird, you had this sense of urgency of, well, I could do this. I could do that backpacking trip, but I'm going to do it right now. This is that sense of being present, being fully in the moment, giving our attention, our energy, that time of right now, sense of presence.
Yeah.
And the things that I see so many people forgetting about is that they dwell on all the things that they need to get done or all the things they need to take care of, or they want to put it off, that they're not literally living present moment by moment and having that experience of what is the beauty of life.
Mm-hmm.
We're a slave to our phones. We're a slave to our jobs. We're a slave to some
people.
Relationships. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're not thinking of a life for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So paddle for peace moving forward,
mm-hmm.
as you allow people to have that expression of self and mm-hmm. be creative, be active, be carefree, right? Because it's like, why dwell on the worries of life?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to care at some point, but honestly, it's shit.
I love that perspective on it, that sense of like it's out of your control. Mm-hmm. So now I'm like, okay, I'm going to ask all the questions. I want to know, where do you see Paddle for Peace moving forward with all that you're doing with it right now?
I see Pound for Peace impacting a lot more children. Mm-hmm. And I also see Pound for Peace creating a job for people where they have work-life balance.
Yeah.
I'm talking 4-day work week, giving them the training and the skills to go out and share those with the world, making an impact so they have purpose, and being a part of something bigger than the corporate machine and the corporate hamster or capitalism or whatever it may be. Giving them a job where they can actually live their lives, yeah, make an income, and give back to the kids. And so I see it being national at some point, maybe overseas, who knows? But I see it being like a pillar of strength in every way, because even with our kids, we don't enable them. You know, we create a safe space and we give them the tools and the resources and we care for their needs. But we're not like, oh, you're Black, you're going to suffer in life. Mm. Or, oh, you went through this abuse, you ain't going to go nowhere. Oh, you're not that educated or you have a specialized plan, you're dumb. No, we're like, you're smart. Doesn't matter what the color of your skin is. You're going to win in life. Mm-hmm. And this is why. You just need people rooting for you and you need unconditional love. You don't need people who are going to enable you to stay down, because that's kind of like the world. It just keeps people down. It's very negative. It's very... But you can break through. Everyone that comes to Paddle for Peace, whether they're a participant or a volunteer, they're a star. And they come because, like, that's just where they're going to, you know, pass through in their journey or where they see themselves long term. But they're going to, everyone that comes through Paddle for Peace will leave with something. So that's kind of the goal I have for it.
I like the idea of not enabling for, people think that they're doing it as a form of endearment or love, mm-hmm, but you don't realize that you're actually hurting that person by, mm-hmm, trying to keep them safe and, mm-hmm, the same.
Letting you have to kind of have a balance, because you don't want to be so out of touch with reality and dismissive of what somebody is actually feeling and going through, but you also don't want to enable them to be like, yeah.
No. Exactly.
Okay, yeah, you gotta work a little harder because you're Black, or you gotta work a little harder because you dropped out, but it's not impossible. Mm-hmm. And once you give people hope, imagine what they can accomplish. Unconditional love and hope are the recipe for success.
Ooh, unconditional love and hope are the, mm-hmm, recipe for success.
Because once you lose hope in any situation, you lose hope in a marriage, you get divorced. You, if you're depressed and you lose hope, you go down a different path and you don't want to be here anymore. If you lose hope in your career or your business, it fails. If you lose hope in your friendships, they dwindle. If you lose hope in yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, though?
I'm going to do that all day today. oh, no hope.
You get it. But truly. Hope, yes, unconditional love is all you need.
That's, I love that. That's well said. Mm-hmm. Okay, last two questions, because I was like, this is beyond fitting for you and the mermaid life that we live. Mm-hmm. With the waves in life, mm-hmm, I have been given this metaphor from my best friend, and who you just said hi to. And yeah, and
so I love you guys.
We love you too. And I keep having different versions of this pop up in my life. And I even have a sticker of it in my office, mm-hmm, that says, you can't always control the waves, but you can learn to surf. Mm-hmm. So how do you handle the waves in life that you can control? Mm-hmm. And how do you handle the waves in life that you either can't control, get pummeled by, maybe let go, or just watch them, you know, crash into the shore?
Yep.
How do you handle those waves?
So I'll answer that, but let me go back to you and your bestie really quick, because I love you guys' relationship, because the way that I see you,
you've seen it all.
I do.
Yeah.
And the way that I kind of know you guys as individuals, right, as far as what I know and what I've seen, I feel like you guys are such a good example of unconditional love, mm-hmm, and balance. Because remember, I won't say specifically, but there was a time we were all at the beach, me, you, Alessandra, Andrea, you came out of the ocean. He already knew. Before I even knew what was going on, he was already walking to you with his sweater and his arms out, ready to embrace you. he knew what you needed before we even knew what was going on, and probably before you even knew it.
When I was crying in the water.
Yes, you're crying in the water, and you just walk down like, oh, look at her, look at how majestic. He's walking out, and I'm like, oh, mommy, blah, blah, blah. And you're all, oh. I didn't even notice. He just blocked you and embraced you before that, you know? And then the things that he's dealt with, right, with his mom going through cancer and his life situations, and you're there for him, and you're that comfort for him, and you're that peace, and you're that unconditional love that he needs to thrive. So I feel like you guys thrive in that way because you have hope for the friendship, the relationship, the situationship, whatever it is, and you have unconditional love. You know what I mean? So
I needed to hear that. Thank you for that. That was very affirming.
Good. And you know, it's what I see from the outside looking in. And just you guys as individuals, like anytime I'm around you guys, like your auras are just, like your energy is just so like contagious. So I love that for you and I love that for him.
Thank you, Rissa.
But when it comes to waves, like you gotta surf more, girl.
Yes.
I feel like surfing teaches you a lot, and this is why we share it with our participants, because when you're out there, you're disconnected from electronics, you're disconnected from your life. All that matters is the waves and the ocean. So it teaches you, one, patience, because you don't want to take every wave. It teaches you, two, to be in the present, because you're just there, you're focused on what you're doing. It teaches you how to let go of fear because of the unknown beneath you. And all of these you can take into life, because in life, in normal day to day, we have the fear of the unknown. We have the fear of the future. In the ocean, you don't know what's beneath you. You're floating on your board and your attention is elsewhere. Do you care about what's beneath you? No, you're just in the present moment having fun. And then it teaches you the thrill. Once you stand up and catch a wave, you're like, yeah, baby. So all of these lessons that you, you know, subconsciously partake in with surfing, you can apply them to your everyday life. Patience.
Presence.
Letting go of the fear of the unknown. And just having a fucking blast.
Thrill.
The thrill of life. It's magical to be alive. Yeah. It's so magical. So surfing and life go hand in hand.
I think out of the 80-something podcast episodes I've recorded so far, that is by far my favorite answer I've ever gotten. That, of course, spoken like a true mermaid. Yeah.
Oh, thanks, Jeff.
Rissa, thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to see where you go. I think everything you're doing is amazing. You're giving back, you know, in your own way. And I think this therapist thing will work off the podcast with this, because I think there's a lot we should talk about, and I could probably offer some guidance in your healing journey, because you have so much to offer, but you don't want to let your demons hold you back from that, because you're not at your full potential where you could be, because you have all of this noise. But we'll work on that.
Preach, girl. You're speaking the truth right now.
I love you, Mermy.
I love you, Rissa.
Thank you for joining me on another episode as we learned and explored all things movement, mindset, and medicine. As always, my goal for each episode of this podcast is to share innovative tools and techniques to help you thrive and find stability with your overall health and personal development, alongside the growth of the world around us. Please share this with someone you know will benefit from this episode, as well as rate and review. This helps us reach more people and provide feedback as to how we can better help each of you. Make sure to check out our community website, www.mermaidmethod.com, to learn more about our upcoming events, eco-friendly products, and coaching programs. Now let's make massive waves together.